from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Bauer, Phil Beverly, Stephanie Hitt, and Michael Lotus. Our program tonight, coming to you from home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, audio and video every week and 24 hours a day, it's beyondthebeltway.com. We got another great 2 hours of conversation coming up because it's been another spectacular week. And first of all, I want to thank Chris Roebling for sitting in last week while my granddaughter and I went for a great vacation in Seattle. But again, thanks, Chris, for giving me an opportunity to get away for a Sunday night. And I want to begin with you, Phil Beverly, because one of the big stories of this week is whether or not Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, is in the doghouse. The president has said some questionable things about him, which we'll put on the record in just a moment. But as I recall, of all the changes that were made with the new administration, one of the things that you disagreed the most and disliked the most was the selection of Jeff Sessions. So does the possibility that he might lose his job make you happy?
Oh, absolutely. This week, I read that he's trying to revisit civil asset forfeiture, which has been just a ridiculous sort of policy that the government can take your assets without you ever having been convicted of a crime. The libertarian part of my progressiveness says there's something fundamentally wrong with that. The moving to mandatory sentences, again, punish is just, it's too much. He's got to go.
Michael Lotus, you are a Trump supporter. You are a man of the law yourself. You're a lawyer. Would you be pleased if the Attorney General were to move on?
I'm somewhat indifferent. I don't know who we might get, who might be better or worse. I agree with Phil, though, on the civil asset forfeiture thing. I don't think that's a particularly right-left issue. It's an abuse of government power as it's been used. It's a very bad thing, and I'm disappointed to see Jeff Sessions pushing that to expand that.
Michael Bauer, another one of our Democrats. Michael, as an opponent from the left, moderate left, I might say, is it best to have Jeff Sessions around as a whipping boy, or if he loses his job, could someone come in that's maybe a little more moderate?
Well, first of all, I don't think someone's going to come in who's going to be more moderate. I fear if Jeff Sessions either is fired or resigns, I fear who the president would put in place of Jeff Sessions. I think there's another factor, though, in what happened this week with Jeff Sessions that no one is talking about. By the fact that the president went after Jeff Sessions, someone who has been incredibly loyal, who helped make Donald Trump president, I think it sends a message to other members of the cabinet that there is no loyalty from the president to any of them. And I think that could possibly quite undermine the president down the road later this year.
Stephanie Hitt, I want to get your reaction to just what Michael had to say.
I actually kind of agree because Jeff Sessions was the first one out of the gate for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's, you know, sort of campaign with this idea of loyalty and having a good cabinet. And so that's really troubling. The other thing is, you know, could there be something a little bit more at stake going on behind the scenes? And that is, is this his way of replacing Sessions and getting someone in who might eliminate the special prosecutor?
No.
And
well,
so
that clearly is the speculation. And again, the president did something this week, which he surprisingly always seems to do. Despite hating the New York Times, he had an exclusive interview with the New York Times because obviously a lot of news is made there. Of course, it could be made with any newspaper that he sat down with or radio or television show. But again, in an interview earlier this week, here's what he had to say about Jeff Sessions. How do you take a job and then recuse yourself? If he would have had recused himself before the job, I would have said, thanks, Jeff, but I can't. You know, I'm not going to take you. It's extremely unfair, and that's a mild word to the president, end of quote. So does Does Donald Trump have something there that maybe Donald or maybe Jeff Sessions was less than candid to him during the job interview process? Is there any part of that statement by President Trump that maybe has some truth to it in your view, Michael?
Well, I think the president has a problem with the timetable. If I recall, the president offered Senator Sessions the position of Attorney General shortly after the election in November of 2016. Sessions was confirmed by the Senate, I believe, in late January of 2017. And in February, it came out that Sessions had several meetings with the Russian ambassador. And it was because of that, which he did not disclose. Let's just say he did not disclose.
Okay.
That he did not disclose. And based on that, he ended up recusing himself. There was nothing for him to recuse himself from in November.
There was nothing for him to recuse himself from probably ever. I think it was a bad call on Sessions' part. He probably should have. I don't know whether he should have consulted with the president or what he should have done. He should have gotten better advice before he did it. He could have stepped back and waited until there was some kind of criminal charge or something that he could say, make a better assessment. I think he just wanted to step back and wash his hands of it, and I don't think that was a good play by Jeff Sessions.
I thought it was actually the smart play by Sessions to recuse himself early so that there's no sort of hint of any conflict there. Because he got sort of caught having had those conversations, just the appearance, whether there was any there was unimportant. Right. But I thought that was a smart thing for him to do, to show some confidence.
I agree, Stephanie. Because I think it could end up being the most genius move by recusing himself, taking away that edge of him guiding the hand of any prosecutions, and having a special prosecutor like Robert Mueller, somebody who's out there. The upside of it, although it doesn't look like it's heading that way, but there could be an amazing genius upside, and that is that Robert Mueller and his team of Democrat fundraising supporters could end up not finding anything, which would be even, I mean, would clearly end
you
up...
You believe that?
That's not going to happen.
No, because unfortunately, and I think Trump now realizes that, special prosecutors... They have an incentive to keep digging, and that's what they're going to do.
Here's a big question for everybody. I want to get everybody's reaction, starting with you, Phil. Do you believe the special prosecutor now, by looking into the actions of the Trump family, is that going beyond the focus of this investigation? And it should go, and should it, in your opinion, go beyond that?
Yeah, I think the president opened his family to it by his including them so closely to the policymaking mechanisms of the White House. Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner are way too close, given that they have no political experience in the White House. Well, if you want to bring them in, then they're going to be fair game. That's just all there is to it. If you're going to send your son out, Donald Jr., then he's going to be subject to that kind of scrutiny.
When you say send them out, I want to refine that and look into that when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. Wherever you're listening, from coast to coast and border to border. Also, we have a new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci. He was on all the shows today. Sean Spicer is out. Sarah Huckabee has been up to a new position as the press secretary. She's been pretty much the spokesperson the last several weeks anyway. Your reaction to the new voices of the Trump administration. 1-800-723-8289.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
First 2 months back in Chicago, we want to get everybody's reaction to the new communications director. He was on all the shows today. We're going to start with you, Stephanie. What was your reaction to Scaramucci?
I think he's going to be great. He's very clear. He makes it clear that he knows how to translate Trump, which is kind of important. I think that a lot of times, as a Republican, I feel like Democrats have often misconstrued things that Trump says. He tends to say things offhand, a little flippantly. So hopefully Scaramucci can rein that in a little bit and sort of get him to focus on what he says.
Michael, I want to get your reaction. The fact that he may be very much like Trump, is that good?
I don't think that'll make any difference. I think the main thing is that there has to be some discipline brought to the process. In particular, this problem with the leaks and the administration being unable to control the message.
They've got to enforce the.
They have to enforce the law and enforce the rules. And he's made it clear that's what he plans to do.
Yeah.
If he can do it, more power to him.
Philip Beverly?
I think he's going to be playing a game of whack-a-mole trying to control the leaks because the president, unfortunately, has I think, made some enemies in both the justice community and in the intelligence community.
Without question.
I'm just saying.
He did say today because he cannot control the outside agencies, he's going to focus his attention on the leaks in the White House because a lot of the people there are not serving the president. And so he's going to have a meeting. I think he said he's going to have this meeting tomorrow, and he's going to let them know. If there's leaks, people are going to go. I mean, heads are going to roll in that communications department, as they should.
And I think that underneath that, you have to ask, so why are people leaking? What is the internal climate of the White House that would lead somebody who's obviously on that team to betray that
political
team?
Political operatives of all stripe for all time have always done that. They feel there's something by leaking this. They're going to make friends with the media, and that person in the media is going to somehow help them move their career forward. I mean, that's why they do it. I think there's more of it now. There's more of it now.
And that's
And I think it's
troubling.
Because – I think there's more of it now because there's a – There is an unclear power at the top. They don't really know who's going to come down and slice your head off or something else off if you talk. Michael Bauer?
I have to tell you, I think some of these leaks are coming either directly from the president or are being authorized by the president. There was one statement this week that they were surprised that Jeff Sessions did not resign after the president went after him. What do you think that's actually coming from? Come on. So
there's a Washington Post story today that questions it talks about what was allegedly said in the conversation with the Russian ambassador. So again, could that trail come back to the White House? You're correct. And it could come back directly to the president. It could. But the reality here is this has been a massive sieve for the last 6 months.
Because it's a very factionalized White House. You have all these teams competing against each other.
There's another problem.
There's not a unified Republican Party in the White House.
No, there's not a unified anything. I mean, the point is, where do you also, how do you feel, according to the published reports, which you either can take or acknowledge or at least reference.
Fake news.
That Rance Priebus and Bannon did not like the idea that Scaramucci was coming in. They opposed that idea.
We hear this sort of stuff all the time. It's impossible to tell how true any of it is. We heard about how Rance Priebus was going to be out of a job like weeks after Trump was sworn in, and he's still there 6 months later.
Bannon was supposed to be fired. Look, he's still there.
It's impossible to say how much
value. Let's also remember that in the previous administration, under President Obama, there was leaking on an unbelievable level. And Obama actually tried cracking down on the leaking and brought a lot of prosecutions to no avail. Right. So this is just historic to government. It's going to happen.
When you're the chief of staff or when you're the special advisor like Bannon, I think the fear is that the new guy coming in, because he's a New Yorker, he knows the president better.
Right.
Now, he didn't help get the president elected like Bannon and Rance Priebus did, but he knows the guy. And I think what I found very refreshing on the shows today, he basically says, "I'm a New Yorker. I'm a New Yorker. We have a little fights." And because of the way he looks, because of his last name, because of his style, he is going to be reckoned with. I don't think people are going to take a lot of crap from Anthony Scaramucci.
I think, you know, he's what's interesting is that people forget. Remember why he was elected, why Trump was elected, because of the way Washington doesn't work. All of this that's going on now, Priebus, the backstabbing, who's leaking and all this, is just further evidence for people in the middle of America to say, this is why we need Donald Trump. Because look, all of these political operatives, the RNC, the Republicans that are establishing,
and it's the Republicans and the Democrats.
And the Democrats, they're all up to their same antics. And that's, I think, in a way, it's exactly what Trump campaigned on is, see, look at this mess. I'm dealing with it right now. And he brings in someone like Scaramucci. So in many ways, all this is going on. There's a lot of noise. We can call Russia noise. We can call this noise. But at the end of the day, it's all playing into the fact that Americans look at that, people in the middle of the country, and say, that's the swamp that's Washington. Leaks are self-serving, self-promoting political wannabes, things like that. And that's what they're seeing play out in this. They're seeing it play out with the special prosecutor. They're seeing it play out with all of this. So in one sense, Donald Trump is not losing ground with the middle of America.
I'm going to ask you another question, though. One name that we've not talked about for several weeks now is Mike Pence. Yes. Does Mike Pence have enough influence in this? He was supposed to be in charge of domestic policy. He was supposed to be
Congress.
Working on health care. I mean, what is his grade after 6 months?
I think he's 911 at this point. I think he's behind the scenes putting out a lot of fires because I think the president is setting a lot of fires.
Mike Pence had an important initiative last week, at the end of last week, which was getting various conservative activist groups to put pressure on the Republican senators to come up with a bill, pass it, and give it to the president to sign. And so Pence was Trump's outreach to the more established Republican activists, which Trump has no historical tie to. So I think Pence, it's interesting for a guy who was a governor and so forth. He doesn't seem to promote himself that much or look for as much attention, but that was an important initiative. And if we end up with a bill getting passed, Pence will have played a role in that.
I think Pence is fulfilling his number one priority, which is not to be the target of any of these leaks. And no one's going after him.
Right.
And he's in a unifying position that should something happen with the president, that Pence will come in as a unifying force for the Republican Party.
Well, he's playing that.
Well, he's
playing it well.
I'll ask my Republican friends, starting with you, Stephanie. In 1 month from now, is there going to be a Republican health care plan passed?
Will it be passed? No, but I think that there will be vigorous debate. And that's really what the vote is coming up this week, is whether to even put it to the floor for debate.
Would it be best?
We got to get to that point first.
Would it be best for this administration if that final bill turned out to be a bill that had some Democratic input into it, Michael?
Oh, yeah.
I think there's no chance. If I'm Schumer, I'm looking at these guys shooting themselves in the foot. I'm going to step back and let them blow themselves to bits. He has no incentive to cooperate with anything.
Absolutely.
I think there's some chance the Republicans will pull themselves together and pass a bill.
The Democrats are just going to sit back with their popcorn on this one. I mean, the Republicans had an opportunity over 6 years to put a plan together because they had to know they were going to get the White House at some point, and they've invested all the rhetorical capital of repeal and replace with no plan. And I'm thinking, you had 6 years to do this. That's what disappoints me the most. Show up on January 21st and say, we've been waiting for this. Here it is.
Would you also say, Michael, that the Democratic Party at this moment, the one thing they have been able to do, they're the party of anti-Trump, but really they're not the party of anything else. Nobody quite knows exactly what they're for. We had Schumer was on television today with George Stephanopoulos laying out the new plan that we're going to give people the tools for the future and jobs. The same old baloney we've heard for a long time.
The new slogan, a greater deal. The only thing that bothers me about the phrase a greater deal is the notion that Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi may have paid some firm in Washington a fortune of money to come up with a stupid slogan like that.
And it was tested and focus grouped and the whole thing.
It's unbelievable. This is all they could do. So, yes.
Okay, so a Democrat, you have no confidence in this new look or the packaging of the Democratic congressional
plan. Absolutely. But here's the problem for me with health care. The Affordable Care Act, whether you like it or not, the Affordable Care Act had three objectives: to make health care more accessible, more affordable, and of a greater quality. Now, if you're going to change the Affordable Care Act, all right, you've got to tackle those three goals and figure out how you're going to improve on them. The only thing that I have heard the Republicans come up with is to say, we want insurance companies to be able to sell insurance across state lines so it'll create more competition. Great idea. If that's all you got, that's not a repeal and replace.
Well, and the problem
and that's all they got so far.
The problem here is, and this is where it comes with messaging and really getting out, is the problem is Obamacare is going to implode. It's not working. And the Republicans feel like they're going to have egg on their face. What I find interesting, and I think it might be a huge misjudgment for Democrats right now, although they're enjoying the infighting that's going on, at the end of the day, if nothing gets done, Obamacare still belongs to the Democrats and to Obama.
You are
and
so
right
wrong
now,
about that.
It is
you are absolutely
down.
Wrong about that.
You are gonna,
Donald
you're
Trump
gonna
and the Republicans, if Obamacare goes down, Donald Trump and the Republicans will pay a very hefty price
right,
in 2018
fix it.
In 2020.
That's why
this, you had the power and you didn't fix it.
That's
it's going to be on you.
The Pottery Barn rule.
That's why
you,
there's a decent chance
it,
that there's going to be a Republican bill, because they have to know that. It's going to be on them, because they're in. They have all the power, so whatever happens
that's
is on
right.
them. Now,
but you
that's
have all
why
the power
I think they're going to
We'll be back shortly with more lively conversation.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
I'm back in Chicago. Folks, during the break, you had a lively discussion. We're going to put some of it back on the air to share it with the audience. In your opinion, we're going to ask our Republicans, I want you can get together and have two separate answers if you want. Do you believe that Donald Trump has any idea at all what should be in a health care plan?
Not really. He's not a detail man.
I'm not a mind reader. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it matters. I think what he's telling the people in the Congress is, come up with a bill you can agree on, and I'll sign it. If it emerges from the process, he's going to sign it.
So when something comes through the process and something ends up on his desk, he's not going to know whether that bill is good, bad, or indifferent. He's just going to sign it because he wants to pass out some victory pens. Is that where you believe we are going to end up?
I wouldn't phrase it so cynically. I think he'd probably say, if this is what they can actually come up with, if this is what they can reach consensus on, he'll be sufficiently briefed on the key points of it that's what he'll say is a very special thing.
If it lowers premiums and it increases access and competition, that's it. Anything that does that,
he'll sign. What
about
if it leaves 23 million people out of insurance?
It won't be passed if it does that.
Yeah.
There's no way the Congress is going to cut their own throats. It's not going to happen.
Only the House did that.
Michael Bauer.
Well, first of all, I think you're right. I think the Senate morally cannot pass a bill that's going to cut off millions of people from health care coverage. All right? And that's why I think health care is dead. Part of the problem that the president has is he keeps talking about, first of all, he talks about repeal and replace. Then he talks about, well, maybe we'll just let Obamacare die. Maybe we'll just repeal, or maybe we'll go back to repeal and replace. He has no policy goals, for what he wants health care reform to accomplish. So that's why he had this big performance at the Rose Garden with members of the House when they passed their bill. And a short time later, he says, well, the bill was too mean.
Mm-hmm.
He has no idea what he wants.
Yeah, and he's –
No, I don't.
I'm
right.
A little afraid when he says, "Oh, I didn't know it was so complicated." It's like, seriously, you didn't get that this whole 17% of our GDP industry, healthcare, was that complicated? He needs a win. I get it. He's got to get a win. His party's not helping him get a win.
No, they're not. But the Republican Party didn't want Donald Trump, and the Republican senators certainly didn't want Donald Trump. So they're in no hurry to give him anything.
Yeah, but the one thing is, Republicans do want to fix the Republican senators.
It's really the president's fault.
But do, no,
the
it's president's up to fault. Them.
The president has no goals here.
They can write
so
a bill.
The president has no idea what he
Trump,
wants.
Even before Trump, Republicans ran in midterm elections on repeal and replace. This is not a Trump idea. This is something the Republicans have actually all united on, which is so frustrating now because now they aren't uniting.
Well, Trump,
at least three senators,
and at least politically pivot from it and give yourself a win. Find out where your win is and take the win.
Trump himself said, "You know, you guys said repeal and replace, and I'm sitting here with my pen. They didn't really want to do it. They wanted to make the gesture. Now they have to put up or shut up. They got to give them a bill."
Well, the problem is also the polls have changed on the Affordable Care Act significantly. You know, when Obama was president, a majority of American people didn't like so-called
Obamacare.
Horrible.
It's going to kill the Republic.
Now under Trump, a majority of the American people really love this.
I want to kind of move it to a new potential area. We began the conversation talking about Jeff Sessions, whether or not he was going to stick around. The president has certainly, you know, passed judgment and made some comments about Jeff Sessions. And if Jeff Sessions, if he's not looking over his shoulder, he should be looking over his shoulder. I'm sure he regrets giving up that safe Senate seat in Alabama at the moment. But you brought up some issues that Jeff Sessions has brought to the fore. I would say the about face. On some of the criminal justice reforms that were moving forward during the Obama administration that had both Republican and Democrat, liberal and conservative think tanks as well as members of Congress, they looked like they were going for some form of meaningful criminal justice reform. You throw into that discussion the ongoing debate about medical marijuana or even recreational marijuana around the United States, and Jeff Sessions is the poster child for Say No to Drugs, which may not be fashionably acceptable in the body politic at the moment. So my question is, if you both think that Jeff Sessions would have, if Jeff Sessions goes, there would be a more conservative person selected. I want to ask, what if the person that's selected is a little more moderate? It softens their position on some of these harder issues. At the same time, maybe someone comes along, maybe it's Scaramucci or someone else comes along, and basically the Republican bill may have a few Democratic things. It may be introduced by Republicans, but there may be some Democratic-related things in there, and that Donald Trump, if we were to look at Donald Trump in 6 months from now, we would find a much more moderate, I hate to use the word liberal because I don't think he's ever going to be liberal, but a much more moderate president because he will have surrounded himself with people that are a little more moderate than Jeff Sessions and others that maybe have his ear in the White House.
I think with Attorney General Sessions, if you got somebody a little bit more center than as far right as he is, that person would be more in line with where the country's moving to. These states that have legalized either medical or recreational marijuana, Colorado has had record tax revenues from this. And I just got to say, we need to be moving in that direction.
Traffic accidents
It's not a matter. We can say what's the country generally doing, but we have 63 million deplorables. Proud member of the deplorables, and they don't like the movement toward liberalizing attitudes towards drugs. They are still somewhat generational. Mm-hmm. They see drugs as very destructive, and they want people to crack down. So you have a kind of intellectual consensus and a coastal consensus that we should kind of lighten up, that this is the way to. But I don't think that.
What about the Libertarian Republicans? That's a big strain.
Yet, anyway.
it's very interesting that you say that, Michael, because the states that have the highest opioid abuse problems all went for Trump, the 11 states.
Right.
So
right.
If the drug use is so abhorrent there, why are they in crisis? These are states that are in, these are, this is a public health crisis that has to be addressed.
Right, but the people who live in those states don't think the answer is to lighten the kind of police enforcement on these on illegal drugs. I think it's to crack down. And
crack like in Ohio, crack down by saying if you have three overdoses, we're not sending EMS to revive you.
Look, I'm a libertarian on this, all right? But I'm telling you what I think Trump and his core supporters think, or even Trump, whatever he may think, thinks his core supporters want.
The question I would say is, what do his children want? What does Jared Kushner want? Yeah. I would say that they are probably more liberal than his base. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When it comes right down to it, who does Donald Trump really listen to? Doesn't he listen to Jared Kushner?
And Ivanka Trump.
And Ivanka Trump. Doesn't he listen to them more than Steve Bannon right now?
I think he listens to his perceptions of what will get him reelected and what his core supporters want.
I don't think it's reelected. I think what gets him the most adulation. That's what he strives for more than anything.
I want to get in a point.
Scaramucci said today on three shows, Donald Trump's going to be reelected.
Very strong about that. He's a deal maker. He's not an ideologue, which is something to keep in mind. And so we're not going to see a really far right president. He's not going to be in the mold of a Reagan, for example.
Isn't Jeff Sessions' policies, aren't they? I don't want to say I hate to use the term hard right, but they're certainly more right than moderate.
But the Jeff Sessions appointment was not about Jeff Sessions' ideology. It was about Jeff Sessions' loyalty.
Right, right.
And I think that's Stephanie could have been Giuliani.
It's about loyalty. But when you give the power to the Attorney General to basically pass judgment on criminal justice reforms that have been rolling along, or issues of how are you going to interpret, a changing, at least climate as it relates to, marijuana in the country. I mean,
you're assuming the consent decrees. You're assuming when Donald Trump chose people in different positions that he looked at every position and all the trickle down tentacles that covered, and he understood the depths to which those. I don't think he operates at that level.
He doesn't operate on policy goals.
He
doesn't operate on policy issues.
He doesn't read anything longer than a page. So how do you know?
At some point, he's hands off.
I want to ask you this question.
That loyalty is more important than the details.
I want to go back to where we began this conversation and ask the $64 question. There are those that suggest that the reason that Sessions is in trouble is he's using the recusal issue as a reason to get to Sessions, that he really wants to replace Sessions so that whoever he puts in there is going to fire Robert Mueller. My question to you is, if Mueller gets fired, what do you think happens to his administration, Michael?
It would be extremely unpopular, and it would be seen as a cover-up, and it would look Nixonian. And people would be very unhappy. So it's a no-win because Mueller's a prosecutor, and he's going to find something that he's going to prosecute
someone for. What do you think of that idea?
I don't think he's going to get fired, but he's already sending the volleys, and he's already setting up the stage to say whatever Robert Mueller finds is going to be completely invalidated. We've already talked about – all I can talk about now are the conflicts of interest in Mueller's staff. And that's going to negate anything Mueller does.
Which tells me that's going to be Trump's
approach to that. He's not going to fire him, but anything Mueller does from here on out is a conflict of interest.
Which tells me that when you have to critique the investigators, that you got no other defense for the misdeeds that you engaged in that the investigators found.
That's called the Ken Starr strategy.
Right. Yeah, right. But remember, there is an upshot.
And by the way, that worked very well for Bill Clinton in the impeachment era. Destroy the prosecutor.
It did not work for Nixon.
1-800-723-8029. Back shortly from Chicago.
Juice, Mom. Juice, juice, juice. Mommy, why are we going to the store?
Mom, I want juice.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. And you were asking a question. We were talking about Sean Spicer a little bit earlier. And you have a career question about Sean Spicer. Where he's going to go next.
Really, now that we are seeing new faces in the White House, the real question is who will play them on Saturday Night Live?
I think the key issue for Sean Spicer, who needs to rehabilitate himself in the Washington, D.C. community, would be to be the guest host on the first episode of Saturday Night Live in the fall and have also Melissa McCarthy on that episode and actually self-deprecation.
Right, the two of them
could
go
and
at
all
each
of a sudden,
other.
He'd be a big hit again.
I think that's a brilliant idea. We'll send that idea to Lorne Michaels.
That's right.
He may already have it, but I think it's a good idea.
I'm looking forward to I want
to get back to, again, what if? What happens next? And one of the things that the president has said in the New York Times article, he doesn't think it's fair that the special prosecutor is expanding his search and his investigation into the Trump family. Who thinks that's a good idea?
Who thinks what's a good idea?
Expanding the investigation
to include the Trump family.
I agree.
The
yes.
Democrats. Let's hear from the Democrats.
Yes,
Philip.
The president took a bit of heat earlier in the year by including Ivanka and Jared and Donald Jr. as part of the inner circle and giving them security clearances and access to information and all of that. If you're going to invite them in, then they're going to be subject to scrutiny, and that's family relationships are secondary because you work for the government. You are in public service, so you are subject to public scrutiny.
But does a business relationship that you have, do you believe that is it easier to prove that there may have been some collusion? I mean, does that indicate business collusion, or does it indicate that there's going to be some discussions as to how the Russians are going to help Donald Trump get elected?
Well,
Michael, where do you come down?
Here's what we know as a fact. Donald Trump Jr., on behalf of the Trump campaign, took a meeting with someone he thought was a Russian government attorney who he thought was going to be providing him with information that was harmful to the Clinton campaign. Now, that is an intent to collude. Whether that meeting was successful, whether there was any information, whether even intent to collude is a crime, that is an indication of intent to collude, which opens up a whole Pandora's box.
Is the intention here the fact that she was a Russian attorney, or because I'm sure you've been in campaigns, I'm sure everyone around this table has been in campaigns, I can't imagine any political operative that would not take a meeting with someone who works for the opposition or someone that says they've got dirt on the opposition. That's what happens in campaigns.
Yes, but there's nothing unusual about that.
As
someone who's been in many campaigns and high-level roles, I will tell you one of the things you do when someone's coming forth with dirt, opposition research, is one of the first things you ask is, what's the source of this information?
Yep.
And if you know going into this meeting that the source of the information is coming from the Russian government, I personally think
You don't take that meeting.
But I thought Donald Trump Jr. has already said that early in that conversation, he knew that this was going nowhere. Either he said it or Paul Manafort said it. They didn't think that that she was not living up to the goods.
Early in the meeting. But he took the meeting, which opens the door. Were there other meetings? Were there other meetings with other people in the Trump campaign?
That you don't recall until now?
Well, but remember that.
And then you find out what the facts are.
That meeting was taken when you knew that Hillary already had ties with Russians, so it made sense if someone from Russia had that information. It doesn't mean you took that meeting because you needed Russia's help with your election, and I think that's a really important distinction. And the other thing is, this is all, you know, this idea that Russia did meddle with the election, or at least attempted to, is all came out after Trump was elected, not when Donald Trump Jr. was meeting a year earlier with people trying to get dirt on the Clintons.
Although Robbie Mook made a point during the campaign on Meet the Press, and his chief cheerleader Chuck Todd has been there for it, and that's on drawing the connection with the Russians, that the Russians were behind a lot of the skullduggery that Hillary Clinton was trying to recover from. I mean, they made that campaign. Right. The media did not pick up on it a lot because they were off on other issues.
Right.
And,
Bruce, was whether or not it was fair for the special prosecutor to expand his investigation. We're all old enough to remember Ken Starr. And what happens, you get a special prosecutor, they aren't subject to fairness. They don't have some kind of specific ambit, and they're limited. They're just going to go down whatever rabbit hole they find something interesting. It's a process that's got no institutional controls on it.
They will find something.
Well, they do. You know, there's the cynical saying, a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich, right? It's not exactly right, but it's too close to being true.
The one question that I have not heard answered yet, and I posed this a couple of weeks ago on the campaign or on the program, and that is when Paul Manafort came in and took over that campaign prior to the convention. He was the guy that, when you know, they thought they were going to go to a second or third ballot. There was no way Trump was going to get to what he needed without sort of some wheel and dealing in Cleveland. So Paul Manafort came in. He righted the campaign from where Corey Lewandowski left it. He came in. He engineered the convention. It was, at least for the Republicans, it was a successful convention for the Republicans at that particular point. It got a little messy later on. But then at some point, Donald Trump fired Paul Manafort. Mm-hmm. Manafort got fired, and then they brought in Kelly and they brought in Bannon in a much more visible way. The question that I have is, why did Donald Trump fire Paul Manafort? Does anyone remember the stated reason why he was let go?
I don't remember the stated reason.
Because I'm going to offer, this is pure speculation. Maybe somebody told Donald Trump, or Donald Trump realized that Paul Manafort, who got him to the convention, was involved in some skullduggery with the Russians. He didn't want any part of it, and so he let this guy go, but he's not going to call a press conference and say, that's why I fired him. But I still don't know, and if there's somebody listening, I may have missed this, but I really don't know the answer. What was the stated reason why Paul Manafort was let go after he got Donald Trump the nomination in Cleveland? And along came, then of course Kelly Conway comes along, and Kellyanne Conway comes along, and everybody says, oh, what a remarkable job she did of sort of saving the campaign. This was after all the stuff about, the Con family and all the crap that they went through after the Democratic convention. But I don't know the answer to that question. So it may very well be, and by the way, that information might have come from Donald Trump Jr.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Back in Chicago. Again, during the break, our producer, Dan Dorfman, flashed me some information about the question I asked in the last segment. And this deals with the departure of Paul Manafort from the campaign after he ran the successful convention in Cleveland. He was brought in because he had great ability to round up delegates and get the delegates there to all support Donald Trump. There were stories that broke during that period of time that tied Paul Manafort, when he was the campaign manager for the Trump campaign, to business dealings he had in a previous decade with a billionaire, a Russian billionaire, close to Putin. His name is Oleg Deripaska, Oleg Deripaska, who is, a multi-billionaire. And he had worked for Paul Manafort on business and personal matters, and all that sort of came up. It was being discussed. It was in the news cycle when the campaign was going on. So at some point, I think Donald Trump realized that this was not a good idea, and Paul Manafort, he resigned. Now, usually when people resign, sometimes people are telling them to resign. We don't know that, but I would say that's probably likely, that he was white lightning at that time. He was toxic at the time. He had done his job, so they didn't need him anymore for that. As Michael said, they were going into a new phase. It wasn't about delegate counting and staging a convention. And so Manafort was not necessarily needed at that particular time. But there were published reports about Manafort and his ties to doing business with Russian billionaires. And those billionaires were close friends of Vladimir Putin. So that is the connection that was out there. It was heat several days. There was quite a bit of reporting on it. But that's when he was too hot. And then there was the resignation. And after the resignation came, you know, Trump had won the nomination and was going on and probably had stepped on his tongue three or four times. And the media was off in different stories. So the idea of some Russian involvement with the campaign through Paul Manafort is something that is part of the permanent record, and obviously the campaign is over now. It's coming back now. Paul Manafort is going to testify next week, as long as Donald Trump Jr. and others were there. But the question that I posed was, you know, did somebody tell President Trump or Donald Trump at the time, did they tell them about all the issues that Paul Manafort, business he had in Russia? Did he know that in advance? Did he know that when he hired him? Or did he learn about it in the newspapers when the news media made the story, made all this stuff up? And so I would ask the question is, when Donald Trump hired Paul Manafort, did he say, Paul, if you got anything in your background that's going to blow up on me? And the question is, did Paul Manafort say yes or no? Well, we don't know the answer to that.
We weren't in the room, so we don't know.
We weren't in the room. But Manafort is coming back. So what I'm just saying is that all this post-campaign Russia talk, it really does go back to what was happening in the middle of the campaign in August of last year. So it is valid because at that point, although there was some stories out there about Manafort's association with Russia or with Russian business interests, not the government, but business interests, if you're a billionaire friend of Vladimir Putin, to me that's a business, that's a political interest, not just a business interest.
Right. Absolutely.
So we're talking about now the issue that the story is coming back, but at that particular time, the American news media were not pit bulls on that story. They were going off in other directions. They spent weeks talking about the Khan family and how Trump allegedly, you know, offended them. And they never came back to that story until after the convention and after the election.
Well, after the election, because even the Obama administration admitted that they knew, you know, early on through the campaign that there were attempts by Russia to interfere in one way or another. And, you know, they swept it under the rug. They didn't make it an issue.
I'm going to ask a Pandora's box question. Okay?
All right.
And I don't think anybody has offered it, but we're going to bring it up here on Beyond the Beltway. Much has been said, and I have said it here, that there has been no evidence presented that the Russians changed any votes.
Right.
Okay? Even though there were attempts to influence, those secretaries of states and voting officials around the country. There was an attempt to do it. We don't know whether they were successful at that moment. But here's my question. If Paul Manafort is this guy with tremendous connections, and you will remember the storyline before the convention was, it was really doubt. There was a lot of doubt as to whether or not Donald Trump was going to win on the first nomination.
Ballot.
On the first ballot. Most people said there was no way he could do it.
Right.
Because Ted Cruz was still winning primaries and caucuses. So here's a guy that comes in, and so we go from a point where it looks like Donald Trump isn't going to pull it off, and he pulls it off. Manafort, using whatever skills he has, he gets delegates to pledge their support for Trump. They don't back away. He runs the convention. He runs the machinery. And I guess my question is, if there was some Russian involvement, was the Russian involvement more about getting Donald Trump the nomination, which was maybe within reach, and that phase two of that would be a way in which they would influence the general election? Now, I'm laying a lot of stuff out here.
I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to go out on my little ledge here, my limb here, and that is, this is a lot of noise, but at the end of the day, Donald Trump didn't have to wheedle or have somebody manipulate delegates. It is very clear, and I think it's also reflected in the challenges that Hillary had in her own campaign against Bernie Sanders, that there was a tide of feeling among Americans. It doesn't come from the Russians. It came from the middle America. And from day one, Donald Trump was going to win that. I think if you look back, you're going to see that the Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio stuff was just flashes in the pan, that from day one, and there were people out there who predicted it, and they were right, there is a wave. He tapped into a wave of feeling that there is no tampering with elections. No Russian could ever have manipulated or caused or changed.
But you know, but the Russians won this.
But it was a reflection in. Let's look at the Democrats. The same wave, the feeling, the Trump, you're not hearing my voice. What got him elected is what Bernie Sanders did to challenge Hillary and almost toppled her. That feeling cannot be manufactured by Russians.
I cannot agree with you more on that point, but I want to get everybody else's reaction to the question that I asked, because everyone's saying, how are they manipulating things in November? I'm asking the question, could there have been some manipulation in August?
Are you saying Trump brought Manafort in because Manafort supposedly knows how to manage conventions. So that's what he did.
And count delegates.
And count delegates. So that was his skill set. He brought him in and it worked.
Delegates.
Are you saying that the Russians somehow have something to do with that selection and that process?
What I'm saying is the skill sets that Paul Manafort brought to that role, could they have been influenced in any way with money, with whatever? Could they have been influenced in any way in getting delegates?
He was going to get those delegates no matter what.
I don't think
That's a counterfactual that you can't ever prove. And as a social scientist, I can tell you,
but
you can't
bring it up on Beyond the Beltway. Back short
that.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
We are back. You're just going to say something about Barack Obama.
Obama was the first attempt by the American people to fire the whole establishment, but he wasn't really that. But for Bernie and Donald Trump,
so this is a continuum.
Bernie's
establishment.
For a while now.
Okay, my question. We didn't hear from Michael Bauer on the question that I was asking based on the time frame that we have put on the table here.
So we're dealing with a lot of hypotheticals here, and we're trying to understand whether there was a Russian effort to collude to help Trump get the Republican nomination, to help him in the general election. And the answer is, I have no idea. But that's why I really want the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, to continue his investigation, because it's like peeling back an onion. And maybe when you peel back this onion, you get to the core and there's nothing there. Fine. But maybe when you peel back the onion, there's a lot there. And there's only one way to find out, and that's to let this investigation proceed.
Does that include going into Trump's, personal finances, old business dealings, his family's personal finances? I don't know.
If his family's part of government,
yes. And there's nothing there, then you stop peeling the onion. That's how I believe. And that's the problem with the special prosecutors. He doesn't have to stop once he realizes the thing I'm supposed to be looking at isn't there. He keeps going, and that's the problem.
Let me ask you this question based on the line of questioning that I brought up in the last segment. Paul Manafort is going to testify before Congress. Should there be, as part of the ongoing investigation, should there be an investigation of the business relationships of the management of the Trump campaign during the nomination process and leading up to the convention? Is that a fair question to ask? You've made a very strong point, which I totally agree. Donald Trump won this on the personality of who he was and what he was saying. That struck a nerve.
Right.
But what you're also saying is there was no potential use of the system, and there wasn't anybody backstage.
There was no manipulation.
There was no manipulation of any other element of the process.
Right.
And there was no encouragement of that. And that I think is a question that some people may still have.
Right.
So here's my concern. Yeah. That we're so focused on whether there was collusion and there was some sort of Rasputin-like puppet mastering and all that. I think the Russians have already won. And how they've won is that it's undermined our confidence in the sort of sanctity of our electoral process. If we have to even ask questions, are our databases secure? That secretaries of state are being asked to turn over voting records. Seriously? That's what we're spending our time on? The Russians have won. No. And so the next time we vote, are we going to have the same level of turnout?
Every time we have an election, the question of the sanctity and the credibility of votes is, let's go back
not
to Florida.
From a foreign government.
Chats, whatever. But the point is, whether it's a foreign government, whether it's a bad secretary of state, there's always going to be those questions. I believe, and I think most of Americans and people who voted for Trump is, that this is all because the Democrats and establishment Republicans cannot fathom that, based on his sheer phenomenon of Donald Trump, that he won this. And
are those the Democrats who have no power, Stephanie? Seriously?
Should there be, folks, there already is, but I want to get reaction to there is now a commission, an alleged independent commission that is looking into the validity and the accuracy of American voting. Is that concept a good one?
It's overdue. The system is hackable.
One word. You say overdue. I'm going to go back and forth. Let's get the other Republican. Overdue and?
Part of the continuing process.
Now the Democrats.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous?
One of the biggest BS things I've seen out of the Trump administration.
Why? Why so?
Because this is investigating whether there was election fraud based on the president's assertion that 2 to 3 million people actually illegally voted for Hillary Clinton. Now, keep in mind, two-thirds of the states in the United States are run by Republican governors. You have a state like Texas where the entire administration is Republican. How many people have been prosecuted in the state of Texas for voting illegally? By the way, how many people in Kansas where Kris Kobach is the Secretary of State have been prosecuted for voting illegally?
Prosecutions is the wrong measure.
But people aren't voting fraudulently. It's not an issue.
It isn't.
What do you have, 1,000 people in the entire country?
We don't know and we can't know. We don't have – our elections are not secure. Our equipment can be hacked. That's a problem.
What makes you think it's a problem? What makes you think that people are voting fraudulently?
Where's the evidence for that?
Are we talking about the –
Tell me where the smoke is. Let's
come back. You say hack. Go back to your – You say elections can be hacked or voter machines.
What evidence do we have of that? The voting machines. I can't remember where I read this. Look, the issue is election integrity.
Someone told you.
Someone told me.
You heard from someone.
I read a tweet.
A guy.
No. But here's something I don't have to try to recall. Unlike most other countries, we don't require an ID to vote. Vote fraud is very easy to do. We should be tidying that up. We should be consistent with other developed nations. What we have now is unacceptable. Trump, I see no problem with investigating. Just as we're sitting here saying, well, we really ought to investigate to see if the Russians had anything to do with the campaign, I see no problem with doing an investigation to determine how much integrity our election process has because of these problems. And vote fraud is a problem in this country because it's too easy to do.
Vote fraud is not a problem.
Yes, it is. It's hard to measure, Mike.
So if it's, wait a minute, what level does it need to rise to be a problem? 1,000 people voting irregularly out of 180 million?
Why don't we just make our practices consistent with other developed countries? Where you got to show an ID to vote like you got to show an ID for everything else you do in American life.
Because a lot of people don't have IDs.
Then do something that addresses that problem.
But that's not about voting.
Sure it is.
That's about IDs.
Well,
we
just went around in a circle, okay? I said you should have to show an ID to prove who you are to vote. And Michael said, truly, some people have trouble getting an ID. Then help them get an ID.
So I show up at the precinct
in North Carolina, and I say who I am, and I sign my
application to get my ballot, and they compare my signature to the signature they have on file.
Yeah.
Now, unless you're going to have a lot of people fraudulently mimicking my signature, They think that my signature matches what they have on file.
I'm going to give you reliable anecdotes about things that have happened in Chicago that people of the Republican National Lawyers Association, who we do election integrity, have seen. You have someone show up, and you go to multiple polling places, you see the same guy show up. They know who moved out of the neighborhood, and they know who died. And they'll have someone walk in and say, I'm Joe Smith. Yes, it happens. It happens in Chicago. Okay? It shouldn't happen. Is it
Jeff O'Malley was a prosecutor in Chicago. How many voter fraud cases did he...
How do I know?
Was a Republican. He prosecuted
would you do it? It doesn't matter.
If you hit
Go
no,
investigate.
If you know these people who are voting fraudulently...
You know they're voting fraudulently.
Yeah,
but you don't know who they are, but you know they're doing it.
I think Michael asks a good question. I think it's one thing that, that Donald Trump has brought up, and that is we have many people, maybe the majority of people in the country, who believe that the Russians were involved. There's some degree of Russian skullduggery in the election of Donald Trump. Okay, they're getting their investigation for their folks. And there's a lot of people who believe, as Michael and Stephanie believe, that they believe there's been some form of voter fraud. Some form of voter fraud. And they think that should be investigated and that should be eradicated too. The people should know about both. Because I think if we're talking about voter integrity, we don't want a foreign nation to influence our future elections. Hopefully, one way to get around that is to make sure that people who do vote are legitimate people. They are American citizens. They passed all the laws. And it seems to me that we need both of these investigations and both of these things looked into if we're going to have a society in the future, both Republicans and Democrats, that are going to have a little more confidence that when they go to the polls, their vote will count.
If we could have a silver bullet, as it were, to fix the voting fraud problem that my friends on the right believe exists, it's got to be done across 50 states and the other territories. And voting is a state function. Mm-hmm. And yes. So for the feds to sort of get involved, they could find we got 1,000 cases a year across 50 states in a country of 320 million people. What's the cost going to be to remedy the 1,000 cases of voter fraud that materially, let's face it, materially don't determine an outcome of elections?
Number one, we don't know that. By the way, the one thing, what the Republicans are arguing is there should be greater identification to make sure that the person that's voting is indeed alive and well and registered to vote. And by the way, on the Democratic side, how many times have we discussed in this program, and you brought it up, Phil, the issues of voter suppression. Democrats right. believe that voter suppression is right. out.
I don't believe that it's Democratic administrations are engaged in voter suppression. I think North Carolina is the perfect example of a Republican administration that got their hand caught in that.
Here's my point. Voter suppression is wrong. Voter fraud is wrong. They both have an impact on delegitimizing that person's vote, an election. All things should be considered. You know what? There may be voter suppression. Your side has made a very articulate point that in certain municipalities and states that exists. I think the Republicans have made a point that in many parts of the country there may have been mismanagement or voter fraud. And I'm just saying is that if you're going to have a commission that is supposed to look at that, it should be a bipartisan commission. And frankly, everyone, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, if you are in charge of the election machinery, you should cooperate. You should cooperate because the goal is to have a more perfect union and to have a more perfect, accurate vote.
So you want a bipartisan commission sort of co-chaired by one Democrat, one Republican, by two Republicans.
I would like to have a bipartisan commission. Nothing chaired by two of one party. I don't believe that. We have callers on the line when we come back. Thanks. We're going to a lot of different directions tonight. That's what we love about Beyond the Beltway. At least that's what I love about the show. Hopefully you do as well. 1-800-723-8229. This is Bruce Dumont. We're now in our 38th year on the air, and it's nice to have you with us tonight.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you. and I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What, the job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Bruce Dumont, we continue on Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us. Here is an email comment, and this is from a regular listener, Lee Mackey, and this will get everybody's reaction. Sessions needs to resign, and Chris, everyone hates Christie, be the new attorney general, and he fires Mueller. Now, that would make the eyeballs pop out of the sockets of every liberal and all the liberal hate shows. It would be great. What do you think about that one?
I think it would also pop the eyeballs out of a lot of the Republicans in the Senate and the House.
But it would accomplish Absolutely. That goal of turning Washington upside down, which, to be honest, 90% of Trump supporters would love to see.
The question is, the question Trump. Becomes, the president could do that legally. The yeah. question is, can the president survive that politically? That's the ultimate question.
No, we're talking about
Let's role play Lee's idea.
Okay.
Let's say the president fires Sessions and he appoints Chris Christie. What would that hearing be like?
What hearing?
The confirmation.
Oh, for Chris Christie?
Well, they're going to ask.
I don't think he would get confirmed.
I don't think he would get confirmed by the Senate. It'll all be about what are you going to do about
the Senate won't confirm him.
He would only be put up so Jared could have him publicly humiliated because right. that's why he's not part of the Trump circle right now. Right.
Well, one of the reasons Christie didn't get anywhere was he was in charge of staffing the administration and was doing a poor job and was proposing people that Trump didn't like. So,
and he put Jared's dad in prison.
Have you effectively served me? And if someone lets him down, he gives an important job and they let him down, you're in the doghouse. That's what Bannon followed up the travel ban, and Christie apparently followed up a project. And he, in his view, Sessions followed this thing up by recusing
But himself. Bannon didn't get fired.
I want to go back to your point. You said it would hurt him politically.
I don't think it'll hurt him.
The base. If he picked Chris Christie and fired Sessions,
right?
You think the base would like that?
I don't know
the
if they would like
you,
the
you
Chris
agree
Christie
that
part.
The liberals would go crazy.
I don't know if it's Chris Christie or not, but if he replaced Sessions with someone who fired Mueller, that's the base would not have a problem with that.
The base might not, but I guarantee
but
you,
the majority
Donald Trump,
of Americans
Donald
would,
Trump would not survive
the base
as president
the majority.
For 2 months after Mueller got fired.
Take us through the process.
All right, you're going to have one of two things, and I think the likelihood is that the vice president and a majority of the cabinet will say the president is unfit to fulfill the duties as president and will invoke the 25th Amendment.
I think we're already seeing, though, that Trump is going to probably most effectively pull the legs out from under Mueller. It's already starting with the conflict of interest that he has on his staff. And I think that what we're going to start to see is, and this would be turning Washington on its head, maybe they don't fire Mueller, but they start going after
because they
him.
Make campaign contributions to Democrats?
No, right.
Really?
That's a conflict. Nothing on the Republican side is ever a conflict.
One of Trump's lawyers donated to Al Franken, of all people.
But, look, here's the thing. If you applied the same standard that Jeff Sessions applied to himself by recusing himself, then there is a very strong argument that Mueller should recuse himself with all investigations that involve Comey, for example.
Yes, I agree with that.
Because of the very strong, and this I know personally, very strong ties between the two.
Yes.
Tell us more about the strong ties, because you used to work in the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York.
Well, and then going into too many details, having family members that work at the FBI who have worked for Mueller and Comey.
They're buddies.
And close colleagues who worked closely for both of them in succession at the FBI.
There's one thing, by the way, that a confirmation hearing of Chris Christie would do, in addition to driving every liberal crazy and every media journalist or journalist crazy, it would take the focus off the Russian investigation for a while. For a while.
For
not
a minute.
Forever. No. But for a while.
But it wouldn't, I got to tell you, it wouldn't drive me crazy. It'd be very entertaining. Because given where Christie's sort of popularity is right now,
Trump is not going to put himself in a position.
But he's a tough talking New York area guy.
Well, New Yorkers are in right now.
He's got the Scaramucci
feel to him.
I got to tell you, I'm seeing Rudy's head bobbing up above the trench line.
That's funny. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Giuliani. Yeah. Pop in. Now, he would not go after Mueller, but...
Would he get approved?
No.
You don't think Giuliani would be approved as well?
No.
Why not?
I disagree.
Because of the circumstances of anybody getting there, they're going to want to know, you're not going to do something that's going to now endanger us. The president doesn't have to run again until 2020. Some of these guys are up next year. They're in an election cycle, and they will need every vote. If somebody's mad at the president, they're going to take it out on who the first person running is.
I'm going to make a point here. I do not believe there is a Republican senator who would vote against confirmation of Rudy Giuliani. Because even though Rudy Giuliani is far more toxic today than he was 5 years ago, the reality is Rudy Giuliani, to many, is still an American hero.
Yep.
To many. Maybe not to you,
and if
but
they
to them.
And if they don't, they don't have I think to vote some against them.
I
don't think they vote against him.
Yeah.
I think maybe they aren't there for the vote.
I think Phil's onto something. I think the problem is if you fire Sessions, keep in mind to the Senate, you're firing one of their own. All right, it's not that
who they don't like now.
Right.
But he's part of the club. So what's going to happen? Whoever gets nominated, even if it's Giuliani, is those confirmation hearings will drag on forever.
And
the question
keep
is, will
Russia
it ever come
off
to a vote?
Out of the news?
But if there's that no there there in the Russia, goal. Nobody will miss it, right?
This. Trump. We talk about him as art of the deal. He's also art of distraction.
Yes.
His campaign.
He's very good at
that. And deflection.
Yes.
I don't think
and
he's going to fire Sessions.
Important.
I think that the tweet was a shot across the bow. That's it. He's not going to do it. And he's not going to make someone fire Mueller because he'd be blowing himself up. He's not going to do that either. He's going to continue to say things that indicate that Mueller may be unfair or unreasonable that when Mueller finally arrives with his box of documents and indicts somebody, Trump will be able to say, see, I told you he's unreasonable. Not going to walk into that.
Will he? Another word that he's put out there. He put the word tapes out, several months ago, and that took everybody into a direction of about 3 or 4 weeks of figuring out what did he mean by tapes. Well, the new word is pardon. Now, the president has the right to pardon.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been tested whether the president can pardon himself. What do you think, Mr. Bauer, since pardon was the word you wanted to talk about tonight?
Actually, I think this is one of the most fascinating developments in the past 2 weeks. I would not be surprised to see President Trump issue pardons. I personally view the Constitution, the constitutional authority to pardon, is very wide. Mm-hmm. So I assume the president can – I assume this is not about Donald Trump. A sitting president, I expect, will be able to pardon himself.
Yes.
He can't.
He can't.
What about the memo from the acting general counsel during the Nixon administration who said that you can't be the judge and the defendant at the same time.
The pardon power is very ancient power. The English crown had the pardon power. It's basically limitless. Now, it will be challenged in court. If he pardons himself and then he's subject to some criminal liability, it'll be challenged. But
actually, I'm not sure
he's going to do it.
If it's challenged in court, what court has jurisdiction to hear that case?
Well, there'd be a motion. Well, there'd be a motion,
but I think any court would have to dismiss the case because I don't think a court has it. Has the right to review a presidential pardon.
Presidential executive.
Exactly.
We'll it's only, absolute.
Well, we'll only know if it plays out. We'll only know if it plays out. But on whether he'll use the pardon power on other people, it's limitless.
And
basically.
What would and what thing. Have they done
why
that they
he,
need
why
to
why
be
does
pardoned?
Why throw that word out? Again, it's diversion.
I know exactly. Yeah. And he doesn't have to go that far to do him, you know, to pardon himself. I mean, he knows that at some point he can pardon enough people that Mueller doesn't have anyone to talk to, doesn't have anywhere to go. And that's all he has to do. Again, all he has to do is pull the legs out from under Mueller.
I think
that's what he's going
but
to
politically,
do.
That's an admission of guilt. You're pardoning people because they did something wrong.
Speaking
in
of
the interest
pardoning,
of the country and moving forward.
Here we go. Here's the segue. Here's the speaking of pardoning someone that did something wrong, you want to make a point about O.J. Simpson. Stephanie,
I do.
Who's back
like,
in the news again.
Right. I just, as a note, I feel in many ways that all this talk about special prosecutors and finding a fall guy reminds me of Ken Starr and how he ended up with Monica Lewinsky, how he found her during this whole process, shows how far it can go. But at about that same time in history, we were all watching the Ford Bronco chase with O.J. Simpson, and now he's back in the news, and he is now up for parole. In what October?
Granted parole.
And
parole, he's going to get out.
And it's
and
it's
you don't like that.
I personally don't like it because, especially the way television and media and everything is today, I think that we're going to see a revival of O.J. Simpson. And
all right,
I personally
wanna, before you, I want to get everybody's reaction to the decision of the parole board first.
I didn't look at all the evidence, but I will say this. I think the idea that if you commit some crime and the prosecutors make the best case they can and they get the biggest sentence they can get, which they always try to get, and you finish your sentence, you're done. You walk out of prison.
What about it? Yeah. Quickly, quick answer.
Parole board did their job.
Yeah. I expect we'll see O.J. Simpson on Dancing with the Stars.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think we'll see that, but again, the parole board did his job. He paid his – he did the time and paid the – he did a crime. He did one crime and paid the time.
I will not watch him on reality.
And you will not watch him on TV.
I will not watch him on TV. I will not.
Back shortly. Thanks for joining us.
Why are we going to the store? Mom, I want juice.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back in Chicago, and we're out of time. Our last segment for those listening to us on radio and also on the internet, we'll try to get a call in. But I didn't want to leave the air this evening without giving everybody an opportunity to make a comment about probably the most tragic news that came out of Washington last week was news that John McCain, longtime Arizona senator and an American hero, and I really believe that. Has brain cancer, and we wish him well. But again, this is a guy that everybody's got an opinion on, and sometimes those opinions have shifted. I think a lot of conservative Republicans for many years thought John McCain was absolutely a terrific human being and the hero that he is. And then he was ended up on the wrong side of some political decisions based on their politics. and John McCain has been seen as sort of an albatross around the neck to many in the Republican Party, at least the conservative elements of the Republican Party. But I want to get our Republicans, first of all, to comment on the news. Michael, we'll start with you.
Yeah, John McCain is a guy whose service everyone has to respect. I have not been happy with his politics for many years, but I hope we can go abstract away from that to the human level and say we feel sorry to hear this. We're going to pray for him and his family and their well-being. Hopefully he won't suffer too much. Maybe he'll even do better. He's an old man. He's not going to probably bounce back from this thing. But we should be able to separate our kind of human sympathy and decency from our political disagreements.
Stephanie Hitt.
Well, and we were talking about this earlier. My debut on the show was because I was a McCain delegate.
Yep.
And so in terms of, you know, political movements, that I feel like my path matches his in some ways. And but I think that and there's no doubt everyone understands his heroism and the way that he served this country. There are very few that can match him in terms of his service to the country. And that's the
Bill
best.
Beverly from the other side of the aisle, again, probably the most popular Republican with Democrats is John McCain.
I would say that that Senator McCain plays this really key role in his party, and it's keeping him honest. Just because he's sort of the 10th man, when the first nine all agree, and he just is going to be contrarian, just to keep him honest. And no, his heroism can never be questioned.
Right.
The North Vietnamese offered to release him to embarrass this country when his father was the Sink Pack during the war, and he refused to go after his back was broken after ejecting from his airplane.
Exactly.
I mean, for his heroism to ever be questioned, that's unconscionable.
Right.
And the sad part for me is this part of his life now has to play out in public, and the cost that must be to his family. I would hope that people would really respect his privacy.
Michael Bauer.
John McCain, to me, is someone who has had a lifetime of public service, from his time in the Navy through his time in the United States House of Representatives and his years in the United States Senate. And to find out now that he is diagnosed with glioblastoma is just an absolute tragedy, for this country, a tragedy for the senator, a tragedy for his family. And my thoughts and prayers are with the senator and his wife, Cindy, and their family.
Right.
Just to follow up on something you said, to me, a turning point in the presidential campaign was when Donald Trump questioned whether or not John McCain was a hero, said that, you know, he thought heroes should be alive, not captured, and he made a derogatory comment. There was a lot of gnashing of teeth, a lot of negative reaction to that. But what surprised me and why I believe it was a turning point in the campaign was here was a Republican candidate challenging one of the givens of American politics, that John McCain was a bona fide hero.
Right.
And he challenged him on that. He challenged the heroism of John McCain. And he kept winning Republican primaries after primary. And he ended up with the nomination. He then went on to suggest, you know, that maybe, you know, George Bush made a mistake by invading Iraq, and maybe faulty intelligence led us into a war we should not have had. These were things being said in a Republican primary by a Republican primary candidate, and he was getting away with it, and he was winning primaries, saying what most politicians or most, you know, pundits would say were outrageous statements, right. And yet Donald Trump got away with it. I don't think that John McCain ever forgot what was said. I don't think there's a lot of Republicans that ever forgot what Donald Trump said about him or about Lindsey Graham or about Marco Rubio or about any Jeb Bush. I mean, all of the other people that were said, but probably the most devastating thing. And again, as I look back on the campaign, that's when I sort of believed. I said, you know what, Donald Trump is really, he's saying things that are outrageous, that decent, honorable people don't say in public. And then there was the incident with the handicapped individual, which he said he wasn't making fun. But everybody that saw that video, right. I think everybody saw one thing. So it really did say about something that's going on. It wasn't just this it was that the American people were so fed up with the establishment, with the status quo, that they would take someone that would say outrageous things right. about heroes or about basic Republican orthodoxy,
right.
and still they would hold their nose or look the other way or still support these guys or show up for 30, 40,000 people at a rally, despite the fact that he had committed, you know, cardinal sins. And how many Sunday nights did we begin this program in 2016 talking about the latest cardinal sin of Donald Trump? And was that the nail in the coffin? Well, I mean, the nail that was driven, right. for Senator McCain in this particular case, that was like the first of many. But he survived all these things. But again, my thoughts on John McCain, I will never take away that he was an American hero. The politics evolved over the years, and we wish him, his family, his Cindy, and his children, we wish them well in this very difficult time. And I agree with Phil, doing this under the public spotlight is going to be very difficult as well. On that note, we're out of time. Our thanks to Sam Greenberg and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next Sunday night, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.